Thank you for making it today to our podcast. We want to talk about the aggregators. We have Haibak, the CEO from EvaGuru, and we have Ben Leonard from ecombrokers.co.uk. So the current situation looks very, very, very positive, at least for me, because, you know, there is so much money flowing into the system. What do you guys think about it? And what do you think will be the next steps and where is going to take us? Will it be fast? Will it be slow? What do you think about it? Who want to go first? Ben or
I'll jump in. It's an incredible situation, which has evolved rapidly over the last 18, 24 months. I sold in late 2019, and I can mention this, it's public domain, they use me in their PR. I sold to Thrasio in late 2019, so right before the explosion in mergers and acquisitions in e-commerce. And, you know, this is the new Wild West, right? People spoke about the Wild West of Amazon in 2014, 15, 16, right? Where anyone could sell anything and make a ton of money, a quick buck. But now we're in a new Wild West in the mergers and acquisitions side of e-commerce and Amazon, because it's so immature and the rules are still slotting into place, right? And for me, what's going to happen is more money will continue to be raised, but probably 80% of the aggregators are going to fail one way or another. They'll either fail and disappear or semi-fail and get eaten up by a bigger fish, because so many of these guys, they're good at raising money, but they can't operate an e-commerce brand or okay. e-commerce business. And they're struggling. And I'm seeing signs of them struggling already. Some of them are frantically trying to merge with each other. And so what's going to happen, I think, is when that 80% of them fail, there's going to be a gap. And that gap is going to be filled as this M&A side of e-commerce continues to mature. It's going to be filled by more, shall we say, mature, traditional, if you like, private equity, who really do know how to operate brands. And they're going to see the opportunity, because what we have at the moment is a bunch of guys who've raised some money to buy e-commerce businesses because no one else was doing it, because everyone was scared to buy an e-commerce business. And they decided to take the risk. They followed in Thrasio's footsteps. Now, the mature private equity guys are seeing this and saying, well, actually, there's an opportunity for us here, because they've got money and no operational skills. We've got money and we do have operational skills. And when that happens, all these wannabe aggregators who aren't very good are going to get crushed. So that is what I think is coming up. I don't know how soon it's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
No, that's okay. That's a great one, because one of the things obviously that I see, like in the last 24 months that you mentioned, Ben, is roughly $10 billion is raised by these aggregators. And seems like the trend continues to be in that way. Now, there are some signs that, you know, like they kind of grow their revenues, but in terms of profits, I also have a lot of doubts, because, you know, I also work with a couple of them. And typically, as you said, the level of Amazon experience is very low. But what they do is, like, with the money they basically raise, they got some really good hires, like PPC guys, SEO guys. I mean, I see that, you know, there is a lot of investment they do. The only thing that I am not sure is, like, you know, being an Amazon seller myself, this is a business of, like, you need to know every single cent, you know, what's going on. And it has to be a lean company. It's not like, you know, you can just hire one PPC guy, the top guy, the other top guy for something else. Like, you know, people are really trying to make a very lean execution when they are running Amazon to be profitable. And this is something that I don't see with the aggregators. So that's why the only thing is, as long as the money flows, it will definitely delay the failures of the ones which are not profitable. But it's not clear to me for how long the money will flow into that aggregators. My assumption at least another 10 billion is coming. You know, that's my assumption. Now, the other thing you mentioned is what I'm seeing now is also kind of in parallel. I was talking to a couple of brands where the private equity firms and the family houses in US are approaching to them now. But 6 months ago, I didn't see that type of guys. It was more aggregators and their M&A guys is like, you know, headless chickens. They are everywhere now in every single, trade show and trying to get no more, sellers. But right now I see this professional firms recruiting, maybe even, I don't know if you're already working with them, but I'm just seeing that they are recruiting like experts to analyze like certain categories, analyze the profitability, revenue, all that stuff. So this is what I'm seeing in the last 6 months. Is that my understanding? Is it's also what you are seeing, like that these PE firms and the family houses, they are all started to enter this market. At least they are analyzing.
And that's kind of, so that's what I'm getting at, right? The more experienced, mature side of the PE side of things has seen the relative success, albeit no one's actually had an IPO yet, of the e-commerce aggregators, and decided now it's time for the real big boys to get in there. And some of them are enormous and some of them are more like family offices. Either way, they do have the operational capability, I think, and they're getting very analytical, as you said. One of the things where I think they will win versus these particular, you know, not so much the big aggregators, you know, Thrasio, Perch, Berlin Brands, they're going to be fine, right? They're in that 20% that are going to be fine. But these there are some who they're making some pretty terrible mistakes. For me, you either there's probably three strategies that can win. You go big, like Thrasio, Perch, Berlin Brands, or you go small, and you cut your cloth accordingly, and you recognize that you're small, and you buy small brands, and you live within your means, and you don't try to be Thrasio, and you create a perfectly fine, perfectly good little roll-up and sell it on, possibly to another aggregator, or possibly to big boy private equity, if you like. And then there are those making pretty terrible mistakes of, they've raised, you know, they get a bit too big for their boots, right? They've raised quite a lot of money, maybe tens of millions. But actually, that's kind of nothing now. And having raised that money, they're trying to behave like the likes of Thrasio, Perch, etc. And they can't afford to do it. And these are the guys that are flailing and they're in a pickle. And one of the problems that they have, of course, is they can't hire the talent because the talent doesn't want a job. The talent wants to build a brand and then sell it. Exactly. And this is the problem they're having. And what's really interesting is that you're seeing businesses like the one I had that was run by one or two people, or maybe a slightly larger team, but still not too many people, and potentially with some help of some freelancers, say in the Philippines. And it's now being run by a big team. Like if you take Thrasio, for instance, now, okay, Thrasio are going to be fine, but still the principle applies. If you take the number of people they've hired, which is astronomical,
right,
and divide it by the number of brands they have, they've got something like 8 people per brand. That's absolutely insane. What are all these people doing? Then when you consider that probably 90, 95% of those people have been hired during the pandemic and probably haven't met their colleagues except for on a Zoom call. And then you consider that the talent doesn't want a job. The operational capability of a lot of these guys is not going to be very good, even among the ones that I think are going to probably be all right, just because they're just so big, they kind of can't fail. And that's going to be they're being found out. And when real private equity enters that space of those who do collapse, then even the ones who survive are going to actually have to deal with some real competition.
What is the time frame you think you're looking at right now?
Hard to say.
It's very fast. I think it's very fast. It's it might be, we might even look at months, you know, not even years. We look at months. Yeah,
you could be right, Omar. I mean, just look at the pace with which Thrasio was formed in September 2018. They bought my business.
It's amazing. They did an amazing job.
Yeah, in late 2019. And I don't have the facts and figures in front of me, but I would estimate that 70% of the aggregators now were formed in the last 14 months.
Yes, that's correct.
So the pace at which that has happened, it's reasonable to say that the pace at which these other things that we're now predicting will happen will similarly be rapid. And so, yeah, you could be absolutely right there, Omar.
I still think, you know, just because like there is a lot of money in US market that is like, you know, in Silicon Valley, and I know a lot of others, they are trying to raise money with exactly the same value prop that they're going to aggregate brands and operate them. I think there is probably another $5 to $10 billion to be raised. That's my thinking. And the money flow is kind of prolonging the lifetime of the aggregators. Well, maybe some of them will be successful, like the big ones, like, you know, you mentioned three strategies. The Thrasio is just pumping more money into the system. So, and maybe one day they're going to do the IPO, et cetera. You know, like there's always kind of more money to come. And maybe that will be the way for them. But I'm going to ask another question on the brand side. Now, let's assume in the next 6 to 12 months, maybe there will be a turbulence for these aggregators. Does it mean that the brands should sell their brands now? Because everybody is trying to buy now, right? I mean, like there are so many buyers in the market. By the way, I don't see even like they are not even able to find the brands anymore. But every day I'm getting 5 calls from aggregators. They offer us like in the past, they were offering 2-3% referral fees. Now it is 5%. It's a Tesla. It's a
vacation. Let's talk about that in a moment.
I don't know what else needs to be, what else they will come up with, but it's crazy. Looks like that it's becoming even more aggressive, the acquisition side of the stuff. So what would be your, advice to the brands?
Yeah, I mean, there's several things you've just mentioned there, right? So let me start with investors, right? The investors are getting smarter. Yes, there's people in Silicon Valley now looking at this and they want to raise a ton more money. But here's the thing. The investors, originally when this kicked off, the idea was, You roll up a bunch of e-commerce brands, and we know that Amazon is just growing year on year on year on year. You just roll them up, you keep operating them. It's really easy because it's fulfilled by Amazon, and naturally it's just going to grow. And actually, the aggregators are discovering, oh, those people running those businesses on their laptops in their spare rooms really were working quite hard. And actually, this is harder than we thought. And so many brands that are getting acquired by aggregators are performing really poorly after they've been taken on because they can't operate them because they're not putting any particular effort or passion into them and they don't have the talent. You know, I am seeing brands regularly where I'm talking to the owners and the owners are tearing their hair out, or the previous owners, the former owners, because the aggregators are just making really poor mistakes in the operation of, you know, really, really amateur stuff. And you're just thinking, who's making these decisions? And so the investors are now realizing that actually you can't just invest and expect to roll up a bunch of e-commerce businesses and for them just to continue to grow. You have to invest in an aggregator who actually is going to be able to operate them. And so recently, for instance, I had a call with an aggregator who was no longer an aggregator. I had spoken to them several months before, and they were just on the cusp of doing their first round of funding. I get on the phone with them a couple of months later and they say, well, we had to do a pivot. The investors pulled out. They got nervous. They saw, I think it was just after Perch raised their latest $750 million or something. And they said they're seeing too many aggregators in this space. They're getting nervous about the competition. They weren't convinced in our operational capabilities. So we've performed a pivot and now we're an M&A advisory firm for e-commerce, which I thought was hilarious because these were guys who knew about raising money. knew nothing about e-commerce. They got found out by their investors, but they were still determined to bring shovels to the gold rush and be a middleman in this and be an M&A advisory firm for e-commerce, despite knowing nothing about e-commerce, which is just funny. So, which brings us why to why the investors are now getting a lot smarter and they're only going to invest in those who they have confidence in can run these businesses. And B is when you're selling your business, you need to make sure you're selling it to an organization who you have confidence can run your brand, because if there's going to be any kind of an earnout, you want to make sure that they know what they're doing. You mentioned also there kickbacks, referral fees from aggregators. And this is something that the lid is going to get blown on this soon. And it's really disappointing for hardworking sellers when this type of thing happens. Let me explain. Let's say you own an e-commerce business. You've been putting your blood, sweat, and tears into it for the last 5 years. You decide you want to sell. And you're having your monthly catch-up call with your PPC agency. And you say to your PPC agency, oh, by the way, I'm thinking about selling. And they say, oh, great. Go talk to Bob the aggregator. He'll look after you. So you think, oh, brilliant. You know, my PPC agent has given me this excellent referral. I'm sure I can trust them. I'll go talk to Bob the aggregator. And so you talk to Bob the aggregator. And Bob and his team offer you a pretty good offer for your business. It's maybe more money than you've ever dreamed of having. They dangle this carrot in front of you. And of course, you trust them because they were recommended to you by your PPC agent. But in reality, your business isn't worth that carrot that Bob is dangling in front of you. It's worth a whole sack of carrots. And the deal structure that Bob is proposing to you is really poor. But you don't know this because you're naive. You've never sold a business before. And you think this is just how it's done. And of course, you trust your PPC agent who referred you kindly to Bob. And so you sell your business for hundreds of thousands, if not millions less than it's really worth. And the deal structure is poor and you never get your earnout because Bob can't run your business and the earnout targets are not met.
Sure.
And the earnout structure is poor, so you're not protected. When they miss a target, you lose out. You don't get anything. And what you didn't realize is your PPC agent just got $80,000 or just got a Tesla from the aggregator. And who paid for it? The aggregator didn't pay for it. You paid for it. Where did that money come from? They took it out of what they would have paid you. And so the PPC agent is probably the worst culprit here because they're not operating in the best interests of their client. If they were, they would have said to their client, what you need to do is what happens in every other mature industry and has happened since the year dot, is prepare your business for sale and take it through a thorough process to maximize the value of it, get it set up so that it's neat and tidy and ready for sale, and then market it to a competitive pool of the right buyers. And you do that using a broker. And that's what happens in every other industry. And actually, the PPC agent would be doing better by his client. He would have a better reputation for doing better by his client, and he could still get a commission because the broker could pay him a referral. But the difference there is that the broker has done their best to take that business through a process to maximize the possible price that the seller can get for it. So everybody wins, even the aggregator wins, because what they receive at the other end of it is a really well-prepared business that they can absorb into their system. And they can afford to pay what it's worth, right? You know, the moment they buy the business, it's worth, you know, triple or 4x anyway, because it's rolled into their portfolio. So they can easily afford to pay, you know, the full sack of carrots instead of the one carrot. And so that's what's disappointing right now, is all of these kind of shady kickbacks and Teslas and all this stuff that's going on. It's pretty uncool. And I would say some of the aggregators are kind of a little bit guilty of pushing myths around how to sell your business. Like I saw one the other day, I think it was on LinkedIn. They posted this thing saying, I'm special offer. Get a 2-year earnout instead of a 3. What? Like that's not how it works. Like the power should be in the hands of the person who owns the great business, and they will negotiate with you as to what your earnout is going to be. But they're trying to prey on the naivety of people who've never sold a business before, that there's a set way of doing it and the aggregator holds all the power, and they will tell you how they're going to take your business from, yeah, we're giving you a 2-year earnout. This is what your business is worth. You send us your financials. We'll tell you what your business is worth. That's like me rocking up to your house, hi, or Omar, and saying, yeah, here's what your house is worth. I'll give you this much for it. You know, that's not how it works and not how it should work. And it's really sad because hardworking business owners are having their businesses basically taken from them because they just don't know any better.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe there are like two things where you can help us a bit more to understand the role of the broker here. And also like the way that, for example, what I think EVA and margin business type of companies really play a role is, so there's the first phase. Somebody wants to sell his business, but maybe he can do some corrective actions. Like maybe there is a 3 to 6 months he can work on his business, make it more profitable, make it more streamlined. And then the business will already be 2 times more valuable just because he's working on the right things to prepare it to be sold, right? And number two is, instead of like going to the first aggregator or the acquirer, if it is like pool of aggregators, acquirers, and they bid for it in some way, which can only be enabled by a broker, then, you know, he can maximize what the outcome out of this, right, as a seller. But I mean, these are the two areas that I see, but maybe I'm wrong. But you're right.
I mean, the key is to prepare. And even there'll be people listening who are like, but I never want to sell. And I'm like, I kind of would encourage you to take a longer term view of it. It's like, well, what do you want to do in 5 years? What do you want to do in 10 years? What do you want to do in 15 years? Exactly. Unless you want to just wind up your business and let it fizzle into nothing, you're probably going to end up selling at some point. And so if your business is sellable, that makes it a hell of a lot easier when that time comes. So, you know, to get onto kind of the preparation side, it's like, well, ask yourself some questions. You know, if you fall down the stairs tomorrow and break your legs and you're in hospital, will your business run by itself? The answer is yes. And that's good because it means that also your business could be sold because it's quite transferable. If the answer is no, then you have some work to do to make it a bit more transferable, a bit more almost autonomous, if you like. Less reliant on you as an individual. So, you know, ask yourself how stable your business is. Do you have a great growth history, or have you plateaued and are you declining? In which case you need to reverse that in order to be a bit more attractive for a potential buyer, because buyers want to buy a business that is growing.
Sure.
What about risk? Are you in a risky niche? Is there anything you can do to mitigate that? Black hat strategies, have you dabbled in those? If you have, stop now. Have you got documentation in place? Intellectual property, trademarks, patents, SOPs? Have you got your systems and processes in order? All these things make your business more sellable, which comes back to the preparation point you mentioned. Hi. And is your business defensible, or can anybody just copy it? Are you just selling stuff, or have you built a real brand, right? And that's what that's what is really sellable is a protected brand with a legitimate identity and with intellectual property. And are you diversified? Are you just selling like one or two products only on Amazon in the US? Or are you selling a family of products in a brand across multiple channels, possibly across multiple international markets with more than one traffic source? You know, if you're relying on one Facebook ad and Facebook shuts down your ad account, then you're screwed. So the more ways that you're diversified in your business, the more sellable your business is. So these are the types of things people can think about to prepare. Automating your business is another great one, because the more automated it is, the cheaper it is to run, and the easier it is for a new owner to run it. So are you automating, you know, for instance, are you using a tool like EVA, right? You know, for example,
exactly.
Are you automating things like PPC, social media, traffic, inventory management, chatbots, email marketing flows, all these types of things? That makes it much more sellable. And then, hi, I think you kind of, the next part, if I'm right, you're kind of hinting at was, well, how then you might, well, okay, great, you've prepared, then how do you sell it, right?
Exactly.
And so what I kind of mentioned before was, and this is what happens in every other industry in the world, is you take your business through a process to maximize its value. And you do that by A, doing what I just mentioned, preparing so that it's more sellable and valuable. And those two things go hand in hand. But then more specifically, when you're preparing for the exit, as you're having your business valued, and that needs to be done by a broker who is both a mergers and acquisitions expert, an e-commerce expert, because that's the industry we're talking about, and an accountant, then they can really understand.
You have the team for that. Sorry to interrupt you. You have the team for that. You can actually do that. What you just mentioned, right?
Yeah, we do.
Exactly.
Yeah,
we do. I remember because I read it on your website. That's why I'm saying.
Yeah. So that's important, I think, because there are some brokers who are, they've been a broker in a different industry and now they've entered e-commerce because they can see that that's where the world, the way the world is going, but they don't really understand e-commerce. Or there are others who have figured out how to pull some reports from Seller Central and slap a value on a business, but they're not accountants. And so they can't do the in-depth analysis to understand the types of adjustments you can make to maximize the value of a business, but without necessarily changing anything in the business. So I can just explain that briefly, which is basically like, so when we're valuing a business, usually in e-commerce, and I'll keep it simple for the purposes of this chat, but usually we talk about sellers' discretionary earnings, which is your net income plus add backs and adjustments. Many people listening will be familiar with basic add backs, which is usually personal related discretionary expenses of the business owner. So like your phone, travel, salary, health insurance, that type of thing. But then this is where a really good, when you've got a good accountancy team in the broker, can get in and do in-depth analysis to understand how they can make legitimate adjustments to maximize the value of the business. So let me give you some examples. Let's say 3 months ago, you negotiated a lower cost on a product with a supplier. So now you get more profit for every unit of that product that you sell. Well, the new owner is going to get the benefit of that extra profit. But unfortunately, you only got that lower cost 3 months ago. So it's only going to contribute 3 months worth of extra profit to your trailing 12-month SDE. Well, that's not fair. So it's perfectly legitimate to go in and adjust as if every unit you'd bought from your supplier in the last 12 months was at that lower cost. You do that across several products, that could be a lot of money. Here's another example, similar but different. Say 6 months ago, you increased the price of one of your products. And when you did that, you didn't see a drop in sales. In fact, maybe sales stayed the same or even went up because maybe customers view your product as being more premium. Well, if you can demonstrate that there was no negative impact of that price increase, well, the new owner is going to get the benefit of selling at a higher price. So it's only fair that we adjust the trailing 12-month performance as if you'd been selling at that higher price the whole 12 months. That's just two examples. There's tons and tons of examples of legitimate adjustments that a good broker will be able to do to maximize your seller's discretionary earnings and therefore maximize the value of the business. Because bearing in mind that the multiple that is applied to your sales discretionary earnings, people talk about multiples all the time. Oh, I sold my business for 2x, I sold my business for 3x or 4x or whatever. The higher your SDE, your multiple is also going to be higher too, because a high SDE typically represents a stronger business. But when you have all the other things that I mentioned a few minutes ago, the intellectual property, the SOPs, diverse sales channels, excellent growth history, that all contributes to strengthen your business, which will push your multiple up. So then you're ending up with an SDE that's been calculated by a really good broker who knows what they're doing, and a multiple that's higher because you've built strength into your business. And so you're going to end up with a much more valuable business. And then if the broker is doing a good job, they will have helped you to make your business really neat and tidy and built to sell, as I like to call it. It's the name of a great book, by the way, that people should read. And they will take that really neat and tidy business that's just ready to be absorbed into the system of whoever buys it, which is why buyers do like, they do like brokers. And they're going to market it to a pool of the right buyers who have the operational capability to run that brand. So for example, a good broker should not be marketing your knitting business to a buyer who has got no experience in that whatsoever. Or you know, who to a buyer who specializes in, I don't know, pets, right? For example. Or they should not be marketing your business that only sells on, you know, Etsy to a buyer who has got literally zero Etsy experience, for instance, yeah? And they should be casting a wide net to find these potential buyers, not just sending an email off to 100 aggregators, but searching for these other organizations you mentioned before, Hi. Could be family offices, private equity, could be a competitor, could be a competitor in another part of the world who wants to get a foothold in your geography. Maybe they're from Southeast Asia. They sell the same stuff as you, and now they want to get into the US, for example. Maybe they're like an aggregator who does the e-commerce roll-up, but then they want to roll the brands out across retail. And you can see that your brand is going to do really well in retail, and you want a piece of that, and you can see the upside, so you can negotiate a great deal with them, right? Lots of ways that a good broker will cast a wide net to find a pool of the right buyers, so you end up with a competitive environment of them all bidding to get your business. And that's the real way to sell your business.
I think what you just mentioned, the operational experience, I think this is one of the key points. Because when you look at businesses, let's say an Amazon business which makes like 50 million a year, okay? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the manpower they have inside, the processes that are running on an everyday basis, the whole thing around, you know, the suppliers they're working with, the whole chain, what is going on until it arrives at the port, until it goes to the warehouse? I mean, for me personally, if I look at most of the aggregators, I'm asking myself, because you mentioned they have like 8 people per brand around that, you know, but I'm asking myself, because it's not easy, you know, it's really a hard job, which some of us, which are dealing with brands, took us maybe many years to understand processes of other companies, because they're so complex and so big that it's not so easy. So I'm really asking myself, how can they do this within a few weeks, maybe a few months, you know, to break the process down and be 100% correct? Can they be 100% correct or not? Because what I think is going to happen most of the time is they're going to just crash the business and then sell it back to the owner. You know,
I don't know if they'll sell it back to the owner, but I was having a conversation with somebody today, right? And for the most part, businesses which have continued to be a success after being bought by an aggregator are not a success because of the aggregator. They are a success in spite of the aggregator. They're only still a success because the original owner put so much momentum into the flywheel that it's just kept spinning. And it's just almost luck that it's kept going. And sadly, many, many brands which have been bought by aggregators are not doing very well, which is why when you are selling your business, and if it is to an aggregator, there's nothing wrong with selling your business to an aggregator. I like aggregators. I talk to them every day. I sold my
business. Oh, yes, me as well.
Yeah.
It's sold my business to an aggregator. It's a good model, you know. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, but you just have to be aware that there's a pretty good chance that they might screw your brand up. And therefore, if that is the case, If especially if you're selling to an aggregator who you're not particularly convinced by their e-com jobs, but, you know, frankly, you're quite happy to take their money, right? And that's fair enough. You just need to make sure that you have the right broker and mergers and acquisitions attorney, and the two go hand in hand often, at least they do with us, fighting your corner so that the deal is structured so you're protected. So, for example, because I see people getting into this kind of problem all the time. Let's say you have an earnout. Nothing wrong with an earnout, provided the targets are realistic and fair and that you're protected. So if the aggregator is running the brand and it misses an earnout target, you don't want to be losing out on hundreds of thousands of dollars. You want there to be a sliding scale, so there's a safety net that will catch you at the next level. So they miss the first one, you don't get 250,000, but you get 200,000. They miss that one, you don't get 200,000, but you get 150,000. You get the idea. And then there needs to be other protective mechanisms written into the contract. So, for example, it's agreed that you will always get read-only access to anywhere they're selling your product, say Shopify, Seller Central. This way you can log in and you can flag issues and you can say, hey guys, did you notice this, this, and this? I think we can fix this before it becomes a problem by doing this, this, and this. And then when you don't have a problem, because you got to remember that, you know, Dave in supply chain from aggregator ABC at 4:30 on a Friday afternoon doesn't give a crap about your earnout, right? He just wants to finish for the week, right? But you do. So if you can get read-only access, you can flag stuff up before it comes a problem. You know, for example, another one, What if you could write into the contract, and we help people do this, so that if the aggregator runs out of inventory for more than, say, a week in a 30-day period, you still get your earnout because they ran out of inventory because they screwed it up. That type of thing is what you need to be writing into the contract to protect yourself from their potential inability to take the beautiful business that you have built and mess it up. So, you know, that's important.
Absolutely.
I mean, you lead it by example. And what you have said is, we did already a podcast together, and I really thought about our conversation very deeply. And what you said about it and how you handled the situation and everything, you leading, and it was really an amazing job what we have done and how you handled it, and that you got knowledge out of it, and on top of it, build a business on it, and now can really help others to make it even better than maybe you have done mistakes. I don't know, but to make it even better to help them. And I think this is really needed, you know, because as you said, people go in and see, oh yeah, we get a million for that. Okay, let's do it. You know, maybe they can get more.
Yeah. You know? The worst thing you can do is just say, oh, that sounds great, I'll take it. Because, you know, you need to take your business through a process with a broker who does the work to position the business properly. Because what the aggregators will say to you is, sell directly to us, don't pay a broker fee. That would be silly. But the ironic thing is that
I've never heard somebody say something like that, you know?
Yeah. What it translates into is, please don't work with a broker who will properly calculate your SDE and properly market your business to a pool of the right buyers. We just want to take it from you directly and not have to compete and give you a deal that suits us. And it's actually in the best interest of the aggregators to buy a business that's gone through a broker. And here's why. First of all, as I said, the business is going to be better set up for them to take into their systems. But second of all, if you imagine the aggregators, the way they're contacting people is they're scraping Amazon. They're doing a scrape and basically contacting every business owner they can find, regardless of whether they like their business. So somebody with a really crappy business gets a very exciting email from an aggregator that says, we want to buy your business, send us your P&L. And then they look at the P&L and they say, no, thank you. And so if you imagine, you know, John in acquisitions of aggregator ABC gets a really fantastic business sent to him by a broker like us. It's had the financials audited by a chartered accountant. It's had the business operations side looked at by someone with the e-commerce experience that I have. And they know that it's been taken through a process to get everything organized and ready so it can be absorbed by them, to have the numbers neat and tidy and sorted out, and to have been fully vetted. When John at acquisitions at aggregator ABC then shows that to his investment committee, they're going to be a lot more impressed than when he shows them some crappy thing he found by scraping Amazon, right? And in addition, when they then bring the business into their family of brands, it's so much easier for them to run and less likely to fail because it's a good business. So it's in their best interests. And of course, as I mentioned before, they can easily afford to pay what the business is really worth, because that obviously the moment they buy it and roll it into their portfolio, it's worth way, way more.
That's right. Look, we are just coming to the end of our podcast, and I'm really, really inspired. I took a lot of notes. I really love this conversation, which really added the value of the broker and how these things should work. You know, I'm really thankful for this insight span. Now, maybe like a one last question, you know, again, one of the things always, on the EVA platform, I'm talking to 5-6 sellers every day. One of the key questions that I'm getting is, what is the right time to sell? And interesting, but like there are guys who are making maybe $10,000 a month or $50,000 a month or $100,000 a month. So it's just coming from all types of, you know, the private labels and brands, without even knowing too much if their business is sellable, if the product is the right product, or, you know, that's kind of another story. But the timing wise, that question always comes to me. Yeah. It's hard for me to respond because, like, first of all, my thinking is, if you have passion and motivation to run your business, there is always a possibility to grow it on Amazon. But maybe there are so many other reasons maybe to sell, right? So, but what's your opinion on that? Maybe a final question, like, what's the right?
First of all, it depends on the goals of the owner, right? There's nothing wrong with wanting to sell your business for $250,000 or $25 million. Both are fine. It depends on your goals. It also depends realistic, right? If your business is never, ever going to be worth $25 million, and the landscape of the industry that you're in or the niche that you're in means that it's never going to be worth that, then obviously you need to reassess your goals and make them realistic. So your goals need to be realistic and achievable. So first of all, yeah, it depends what your goals are. Second of all, there's a pretty simple principle. Your business needs to be growing, but not maxed out. There needs some meat on the bone for the potential new owner, because of course they want to take the growth that you've experienced, accelerate it even more, and then eventually exit themselves. And if there's not enough meat on the bone and not enough obvious wins for them, then they're not going to be as interested. So for instance, if you're growing, you're diversified, and you're, say you're only selling in the US, but you're still growing in the US, then that's pretty good. And there's also an opportunity for the new owners to take your business into Europe or Canada or Latin America. So you got to be growing and still have opportunities for the new owners. That's what I would say. And then the last bit I would say is a little less quantified and a little more wishy-washy, right? And some people won't like this, but I do like it. So here we go. Sell your business at the point of peak romance. That was a piece of advice I had received from my father before I sold my first brand. And here's what it means. You've reached a point at which you have this romantic notion of, boy, this could be huge. And at that point, you have a couple of options, and there's still opportunities, because if you sell and you know it could be huge and you structure your deal right with a mergers and acquisitions attorney and a broker who's helped you maximize the value of the business and get the right buyer, and the deal structure is tight, you can experience some of that upside of it being huge by selling it to an organization who may or may not be an aggregator, who has the resources to take it to where it might go. And perhaps you couldn't have done that yourself. But if you also sell it at that point of peak romance, and then it doesn't quite get where you thought it might, then A, you got out at the right time, and B, you'll always be the person who founded that brand and no one can take that away from you. So there's two answers. One's a little bit wishy-washy and one's a little more quantified, but I think they both work together.
Right. Oh, that's great. So, I mean, thank you very much, Ben, for, joining us, great insights. How our brands can reach out to you? I mean, if you can.
Sure. Email me, ben@ecombrokers.co.uk, or head over to ecombrokers.co.uk. On that website, you can click a button to have your business valued. You can even download an ebook to tell you all about how to prepare your business for sale. It's a UK domain, but we're working globally, all over the world. And we're here to help. There's no hard sell. Our philosophy is to help people. So if we can, we will. And whether that means selling your business or pointing you in the right direction, giving you some advice, whatever it might be, you can count on us to help you.
Sounds great.
Sounds really good.
Thank you. Thank you for the time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Pleasure.